You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Clark, we're talking about favoritism in the workplace. Do you perhaps have a colleague who is subject to special treatment, you know, while everybody else just gets pushed aside? Or maybe you are the one person, you're that person that gets praised incessantly by the boss, or you're the go-to person for all the great projects. I think favoritism, it's natural to have a favorite, but when it starts to find expression in the workplace as favoritism, then it can be intensely toxic. It's like back in the day at school with the teacher having a teacher's pet, or being the teacher's pet, but obviously now we're talking about the workplace. It can be incredibly toxic. So how do you prevent it? How do you avoid it? And how should you deal with it if you actually do want to take this forward instead of sitting on the sidelines feeling resentful? So we'll take your calls if you've been in this kind of situation, not only as the favorite, but also the person who was set aside, who gets set aside in favor of the favorite. We've got Devon Moonsami right now, the CEO of IChaf Training Institute, which is a South African TVET college. Devon, welcome back. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Azania.
Yes, lovely to chat to you again. It's been a while.
Yes, yeah, lovely. Thank you for having me.
We're talking about favoritism, but, you know, at its core, favoritism surely is unprofessional, right? It's unprofessional behavior.
It is highly unprofessional behavior. But sometimes what happens is it tends to become human nature, where an individual, because of a common interest or a shared interest, we could say, does form a level of favorite amongst the people in the organization. So even on a subconscious level, the manager may just gravitate towards one particular individual because of their heritage or where they've come from, or maybe a sporting interest and so forth. And in some cases, it could even be smoking, could be the shared interest. And then all of a sudden, that may manifest itself by way of favoritism.
So favoring someone because they're doing a great job is one thing, but what you're describing there is potentially favoring them for reasons outside of their job performance.
Yeah, and that's where the challenge lies, is that some people may look at a relationship between a HIPO, which means a high-performing individual in the organization, mm-hmm. and a manager, and maybe that individual is not necessarily achieving on the scorecard what the other HIPO is achieving, and that could be misconstrued as favoritism. So if somebody is getting maybe the prize in a sales team because their sales figures are looking good, there's a delicate balance between the two. So we mustn't confuse a high performer and the complaints or the lamenting of a low performer versus a high performer as favoritism. That is something completely different. Mm-hmm. What we're referring to here is when a manager deliberately, based on things outside of the scorecard or the key performance areas, then starts, treating somebody slightly different in a special way.
Yes, yeah. So even as fellow employees, we have to distinguish between what's favoritism and what is performance recognition that our colleagues may be getting.
We have to be able to distinguish, otherwise we won't be able to resolve those issues.
Yeah.
You see, in most organizations, you have a scorecard or a set of deliverables. So we call it a key performance area indicator. So that is a good indication now. If the person is ticking all those boxes and maybe achieving high scores on the key performance indicator, that is one element. In other cases and scenarios, we see excessive time being spent on things outside of those key performance areas with the manager. So smoking is one aspect. And look, I don't want people to now call you and say, oh, well, I'm a smoker and I'm not a favorite. But that's not what we're saying, that smoker is
it's
a
an
favorite.
Example.
We're saying that. Yeah, it's just an example that sometimes when conversations lean too much towards maybe the golfing game or the sporting match or what your kids did, because that's a shared interest, that is what we're referring to as sometimes a blurred line around favorites.
Yes, and because of that connection, then you kind of get things a little bit easier, or you get preferential treatment on certain things in the workplace. But if it's so known, maybe your boss is not entirely aware or doesn't see how overt or blatant the favoritism is, and maybe colleagues are talking amongst themselves, because people talk about it in their own pockets. Why is it so difficult to address openly and through organizational processes.
Now, imagine speaking to the favorite about favoritism and understanding that that could inevitably go back to the ear of the manager. On some levels, it would make life very uncomfortable for the individual in the team. So if there's a group of six or seven of us and we know that one individual is a favorite, then we generally are less likely to speak up about it because we fear intimidation after we've aired our grievance or our viewpoint. So in many cases, it goes unreported, and it almost becomes like snickering and talking behind the back or at the water cooler. Mm. But this is also not a healthy working environment. So it's important for us to be able to speak in a very parent, in a very adult manner, and not necessarily in a parent or a child manner in these contexts. And that's the only way we're going to all reach common consensus. It becomes, Azania, quite ugly when you're working in an environment and then you know somebody's a favorite and you really can't do anything about it.
Yeah. And it can be, I imagine, really hard to prove. You know, reporting it confidentially might, of course, be a good approach, especially if the workplace or the employer has put in mechanisms. But it may be hard to report because you're reporting it based on your gut feel, based on emotions like resentment and so on. So is it about, as you say, we need to approach this as adults. Is it also about just maybe taking it from sort of playing the long game, keeping a record, having examples, citing examples? Because there's nothing worse than someone accusing you of something and then you hit back with, give me an example, and they just don't give you anything back. So once we pick it up, would you suggest that? What are your suggestions and what do you think of keeping a record?
Well, we can liken this almost to, I know we're talking in the corporate context, but most of us come from complex family structures where we would have recognized and identified a particular favorite cousin amongst a grandparent or a favorite child.
Yeah.
So we didn't necessarily keep a logbook of all the times my sister was made to feel more important and special than I was. Like, for example, you know, I'm just using a random example. So in families, they would be able to recognize and identify it, and it's very difficult to pinpoint. So most of the listeners listening will probably, you know, recognize this, you know, in a home where a parent will treat one child considerably different, and in some cases, parents unwittingly do so. So they may remark and comment in certain ways, and in some cases act out very lavishly or spoil one particular child over the other. And if they're not made aware of the behavior or the pattern, then it's very likely that the behavior won't be ousted and stopped. So we could follow suit in the corporate, in the workspace. Once we are able to then have an open discussion and a dialogue, and I would say use very real examples within the team around the experiences we've had, then you, in a very dignified way, start to alert the managing team or the person who's responsible for this. And look, if he's a leader within the organization and somebody who is very open to feedback from their team, then you'll generally receive it well. Somebody with low levels of EQ won't take lightly to any sort of feedback like that.
Yes. No, and I imagine it's also a mark of leadership that it is natural, as you've described, that it even happens in families to have a favorite. However, in terms of your leadership and how you lead, it should never be, there shouldn't be these discrepancies. You should be able to put a spotlight on the colleagues maybe that don't necessarily often shine as much as others there when they have done something positive or something really great, because they might not express in the same ways. You know, some people are quick to raise their hands where others are more reluctant. You know, they hold back, but it does not mean they're less capable or don't deserve recognition. So different personalities, and it's a mark of one's leadership, in fact, to be able to bring these things out of and recognize that people are different.
And I completely agree with you. And remember, in an organization, we're there to build on revenue. We're here to expand our client base. And when people are not thriving in an organization, it's very difficult to reach those goals and those objectives. And one of the reasons people don't thrive is that they don't feel recognized enough. in businesses.
Mm.
So if you have a leader who's sitting on very low EQ scale, or as you suggested earlier, who's not leader enough to be able to recognize that I'm not treating people equally, then unfortunately we run the risk of losing good people to the opposition, or they'll probably just look elsewhere in another business where they feel more validated. So I think it's very important for business sustainability for managers to recognize this behavior in themselves, and if they indeed are favoring some people over the others, and then start to rectify and rehabilitate it immediately, because it speaks to business growth and business sustainability. It makes no business sense to be unequal in an organization. Yeah. Really, it doesn't.
So what if you are the favored one? How should you deal with this?
Yeah, I suppose a lot of people say, well, I won't do this because I'm favored already, and therefore I will just not say anything. But I think even that individual, it's important for the one who is the favorite to be able to ask questions whether I was promoted based on merit or was it as a result of favoritism.
Yeah.
Also, that person who is the favorite must understand that the pathway is already paid for that individual in terms of favors and promotion, etc. So they could ideally be the next leader in that outfit or in that business unit. So what kind of leader would they like to be? So it's important for staff members and employees to introspect and ask questions.
Mm.
So if I was the manager of the department, how would I like to maximize on the output of my people here? Do you think my current manager's leadership style is the best one to, the best one to apply? And if the answers are no, because you are the favorite, then I would say try to make an effort to be more inclusive as far as everybody else is concerned. So when there's praise and recognition, share the accolade with the team. Talk about the extended team in terms of how we all have worked together on the project. Thank you so much, boss, for that compliment. But I'd like to bring Fatima in. And there's, Tabang, who also had his, his input along the way. So then you're seen as a more democratic team player and somebody who the team will then go to as a person that they can rely on and probably be in favor of your appointment going upwards in the organization.
Right. Let's quickly hear from James in Pretoria with his experience. Hi, James.
Hi, how are you, Daniel?
You're good. Welcome. What's been your experience with favoritism?
Yeah, I remember some years ago, I just completed my honors degree.
Mm.
And then I went to work for this organization where I was more qualified than the person I was reporting to. So what happened is the person that I was reporting to, which was my line manager, will make up stories to the operational manager, and the operational manager will believe him because they've been working together for a long time, And he will even go as far as saying that this person has no reason to lie to me. I have worked with him for such a long time.
Yeah.
And to a point that it discouraged me. And then I had to leave the organization earlier than I would have loved to,
James, so and that's precisely, it's precisely what Devin was talking about. I'm afraid we're out of time, but it's exactly what he was talking about, that people leave and the organization then suffers and loses talent as a result. There are more WhatsApps, but Devin, you've really helped us have a sense of how to approach this particular issue and to recognize it in the workplace. And I'll share those after the headlines. But thank you as always.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you. That's Devin Moonsamy, and he's the CEO of iChaff Training Institute. They're a TVET college here in South Africa.